guys, and our friend Manny looked at our other friend Tyreek and in front of a bunch of guys said, "Guys, did you know that Tyreek can do a flip?"
What?
And they all looked at Tyreek like, "Wait, what? Like, you can do a flip?" It was like a, just, you know, big offensive lineman kind of guy, and not the guy you assume can do a flip. And Tyreek, he just kind of like looked and he's like, "Yeah." You know, he's like, and I was like, "Wait a minute." And he was like, "It was at the lake." He was like, I was like, "Did you do a flip off the dock?" And he was like, "Yeah." And then he pulls up his phone and Manny was like, "Dude, are you going to show a video of it?" And he was like, and he was like, "No." And he showed a video of Manny doing a flip. But like, so he had filmed Manny doing a flip off of the thing, but everybody there was just like, no, I want the footage of Tyreek's flip. And this just made me think about, like, when you're having a lake day, like, there are things that happen that you could never predict. You could never make them happen, uh-huh. But they're so fun and so hilarious and so amazing. Like, it's probably something that you love about lake day, but like, it's just one of those things of like, you just know that if we have a lake day, something amazing is going to happen. I have no idea what it's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that way about all fun events like that. I'm just like, anytime where there's a chance to just laugh until you cry, I'm in for it, you know? And that's, so like at that specific lake day that we had, there was a moment where our friend Joe Pinley has a banana boat that you pull behind a boat. Like it looks like a giant banana and there's like five handles on it for people to sit on and you just pull it like a tube.
So of course you put 10 people on it.
We put 10 people on it. And it was really fun. It was so fun. I mean, gosh, that was so, at one point, like I was riding a boat and watching our friends Austin and Eli tube and they were purposefully jumping awake and they're like trying to make their tube fly.
Yeah.
Like it like would catch wind gusts and raise up. And it was unbelievable. They'd flip it over and like right upside down on it.
The ability of like Austin and Eli and Maggie and Grady and I'm sure Molly as well. I haven't seen Molly tube, but like their ability to do amazing athletic things and their fearlessness of the fact that they've literally grown up on tubes. Right. All summer, every summer. It's like whenever Jack gets to go with Grady, he'll always come home like just he'll start telling a story and he can't finish it because he's dying laughing about like something he and Grady did or something Grady did. Right. Like he rode on the back of the couch tube, only holding on with his feet, just like dragging the back of his body across the water or something, you know, just some crazy thing that Grady came up
with.
He's
amazing. Yeah. One time I was down at their lake property and Grady disappeared and we realized he had climbed to the top of like a 30-foot cedar tree and he was just sitting up there like cedar trees are not the ones that you climb.
No,
you know, it's like, it was just
like the bark would really hurt. I would think,
yeah, you'd get stabbed and
yeah,
whatnot. But like, I was so, it was just
like the bark is just like 7 million little ribbons.
It was so interesting. Cause he just disappeared and it was like, "Where's Grady?" And he was like, "Hey guys, guys." It was amazing.
Yeah. I love that. Like when you have a lake day where Dickie Jenkins is involved in any way. And of course the lake day that we're talking about where apparently Tyreek did a flip off the dock. We don't know cause we don't have video
evidence.
We don't have any video evidence, but, That was it, you know, at Dickie's lake property. But like whenever Dickie gets somebody on a tube behind his boat, there's just a light in his eyes.
Mm.
The light in his eyes is you're gonna have a lot of fun and I'm gonna wear you out.
Yeah, so a couple of years ago we had our friends from Spain who were here and they were at they were down at the same lake where Dickie's lake property is.
Yeah.
You know, David Beltran, Samantha Beltran, all these kids, Miguel, Becca, all these people we know, and I've like spent a lot of time with, talked to regularly, like good friends, were there on one boat, like wakeboarding. And I was just like hanging out. I was like, I just want to spend time with my friends. And Dickie pulled up on his boat and was like, come on, Thomas, let's go. Like, no, none of my friends from Spain who I haven't seen in a year and don't, you know, like we're on that boat, but I was just like, here we go. So I like in khaki shorts, jumped in the lake and got on the tube behind Dickie, who had like Brooks and Reed, who were at that point 4 years old.
Right.
Like hanging off the back, watching me, and like Blake and a couple other kids were just watching, and Dickie annihilated me. And they would just yell at me. They would just be like, you have to lean. And I'm like anyone who's grown up tubing knows it can be super fun. If you, it's like, if someone is not great at driving, it's not super hard.
Yeah.
But like when Dickie Jenkins drives a boat, his goal is to murder you. It's not like, he makes it hard. He's like,
no. He wants to make sure that at the end of it, you're almost dead.
Yeah. I fell three times and I was literally like, hey, I have to stop. Like, I'm so sorry. I have to stop. And he was just like, come on, you can do this. Stop falling off. And I'm like, stop trying to kill me. It's the only way that happens. Yeah. I mean, he like somehow the way he would drive the boat, if anyone else drove it, the boat would flip.
Wow.
Because you're doing, I mean, I would imagine over 40 miles an hour. Yeah. I don't know. It was so fast. And he would just take these little zigzag turns to where you would fling off the wake out into open water.
Yeah.
And then there would be a little bit of slack in the line, and then he would gas it, and it would just right out from under you. And then both my shoulders would pop out of place, and I'd fall off.
Well, and his thing is, he loves to get, you know, there's a bunch of people around, and he looks at you dead in your eye, and he's like, come on, Thomas, don't be a wimp.
Yeah. It's like, so he did to me on the dang jet ski when I went down there with my wife, and there's 60 people. He turned it on and said, come on, Thomas, you got to get on. And it's not one of those jet skis that you, like any human can ride. It's one that you have to start on your knees and then you stand up on. And if you've never done it, it's like standing on like an inline roller skate, but putting both feet on it. You're just like, how does this thing?
Right.
And Dickie hopped on it and just shot across the lake to get gas.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's okay. I can do this. And then Austin and I were like, okay, get ready. And I was like, what?
Oh no.
And they're like, okay, listen, you're going to want to slow down. Don't give it more gas when you start to fall. And I was like,
what?
Okay.
That's counterintuitive.
That's crazy. I made it like 100 yards and then it just slowly tipped over.
Oh gosh. The slow tip over is the most, cause you're leaning the other way. No.
Yeah. And then like the competitive thing kicked off in me and I was out there for 20 minutes trying to do it.
Right.
And I mean, you know, whatever. That's just what happens every time I go down there.
Oh, gosh.
Welcome. And then Dickie, he told me he was proud of me.
That's big.
It was big. I forgot that, but I got back and he said, yeah, I'm proud of you. You did good.
Wow.
That's like, thanks.
That's something you should be able to like put that on your wall.
Yeah.
As like a trophy.
Oh, yeah.
If Dickie Jenkins is like,
it's forever in my heart.
Do you think Dickie listens to this podcast?
No, but I think a lot of his like brood does.
Hey, this, for those of you who don't know, this is just a wonderful man in our community who has 21 grandchildren, I'm pretty sure. I think that's the current count.
And his greatest joy in life is having fun with them. And I've been grateful to have that like happen. I've been grateful to like ride the coattails of that a few times. And
so
just
cool.
Jump in and be like, all right, I'm joining your family for the day.
It's so cool. I mentioned sitting with those high school guys this morning. One of them, when I asked a question of like, if you could hang out with anybody in the world right now, one-on-one, who would it be? And the first guy that answered said, my granddad.
Oh.
Because he said he passed last year, but that's who I would want to hang out with. He always checked in on me. He always took me fishing. Like, my granddad. It was so sweet.
That's sweet.
Yeah. And I love that Dickie has that legacy as well. Welcome to Ancient and New. It's a Bible study podcast. We are going to, Thomas and I are both going to read the same scripture, and we're just going to talk about it. This is Psalm 45. If you don't know, Psalm 45 is an interesting psalm because it is like a prophetic song about the wedding day of the King of Kings. This is like it says in the beginning, a wedding song. And it talks about the groom, who is the king, and then it talks about the bride. And because this is a prophetic wedding song, this is about Jesus' wedding day, which is coming, which is like, it's hard to explain and a weird thing to understand, but everybody that comes to know Jesus is part of the church, not necessarily the little church that you go to on Sunday mornings or on Wednesday evenings or whenever, or you go to Bible study in, but church, like the church, like capital C, meaning everybody that has come to know Jesus throughout the history of the world. And that it says in the scriptures that the church is his bride.
Mm.
So this is a wedding song for the day that Jesus changes the world. And like we have a new heavens and a new earth and he receives his bride.
Wow.
And so this is kind of a prophetic song about it, but it starts out really beautifully. I'll just read it and then we can talk about it. For the director of music, to the tune of Lilies.
You know that one?
I don't. Of the sons of Korah, a maskil, a wedding song. Here we go. My heart is stirred by a noble theme as I recite my verses for the king. My tongue is the pen of a skillful writer. You are the most excellent of men, and your lips have been anointed with grace since God has blessed you forever. Gird your sword upon your side, O mighty one. Clothe yourself with splendor and majesty. In your majesty, ride forth victoriously in behalf of truth, humility, and righteousness. Let your right hand display awesome deeds. Let your sharp arrows pierce the hearts of the king's enemies. Let the nations fall beneath your feet. Your throne, O God, will last forever and ever. A scepter of justice will be the scepter of your kingdom. You love righteousness and hate wickedness. Therefore, God, your God, has set you above your companions by anointing you with the oil of joy. All your robes are fragrant with myrrh and aloes and cassia. From palaces adorned with ivory, the music of the strings makes you glad. Daughters of kings are among your honored women. At your right hand is the royal bride in gold of Ophir. And I'm going to pause here for a second, because right here at the end of verse 9, the whole wedding song shifts and the singer starts to sing to the bride herself. Verse 10, listen, O daughter, consider and give ear. Forget your people and your father's house. The king is enthralled by your beauty. Honor him, for he is your lord. The daughter of Tyre will come with a gift. Men of wealth will seek your favor. All glorious is the princess within her chamber. Her gown is interwoven with gold. In embroidered garments she is led to the king. Her bridesmaids follow her and are brought to you. They are led in with joy and gladness. They enter the palace of the king. Your sons will take the place of your fathers. You will make them princes throughout the land. I will perpetuate your memory through all generations. Therefore, the nations will praise you forever and ever. All right, that's Psalm 45.
Sorry, I had to scratch my eye. But okay, I did have a question for you.
Yeah.
My pastor. verse 17, does it switch back to talking about Jesus?
I think so.
I think so too, which I think is,
that's the last verse.
Yeah, there's such a cool thing. Like, it's amazing to me oftentimes to think about the fact that, like, this thing's been going for so long.
Right.
Our religion's been going for a very long time.
Yeah.
And, like, the truth is all kinds of things start up all the time and just kind of fizzle out.
Right.
And yeah, there are other religions out there too that have lasted a long time. But
you know, everybody had a lot of hope in like the Scott Frost season of Nebraska football.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really fizzling.
Right, yeah, Bill. but like, you know, I think when I think about our faith and when I think about like Jesus's time and when I think about like the letters and the gospels, like when they were written, there were still people who were around and alive to read those who were around when Jesus was walking the earth, and it could have just died, period. Because people could have proven, you know, it's like people who read those off the bat, it would have been easy for them to walk to one of those towns and say, hey, do you know the person who was blind from birth, and
right.
the man Jesus spit in the mud and told him to go wash in the pool of Siloam.
There's so
whatever.
Many places that are like, hey, at the end of a letter, like this person says hi, and this person says hi, and that person says hi, and all the people over here, they all say hi. Or that one place where Paul says, and then the risen Jesus appeared to 500 of the brothers and sisters at once,
right.
most of whom are still living. Yeah. In other words, he's giving you an invitation.
Go check him
go
out.
Go interview him. Go talk to him. And there are so many places like that where it's like, yeah, when this was written and circulated, these people were still, they were still at it.
Right.
They were still keeping this thing going. And as you're saying, you know, it's like that, that was so close to the events, it could have fizzled out.
Right. I mean, that's just a little note that I'm saying, because he does say the, I will perpetuate your memory through all generations. I think that's cool because it has happened.
Yeah. And the nations will praise you forever and ever. And it's like, there are people in every nation who are lifting up praise to Jesus.
Right. Another thing that jumped off the page to me was in verse 2. It says, you are the most excellent of men, and your lips have been anointed with grace, since God has blessed you forever. Your lips have been anointed with grace is something that I think is so cool. Like I was reading this morning in 1 Timothy and, I've always loved Timothy just as a person in the New Testament, because I've always felt, there's a way that he is talked about and portrayed, and, that he proves to be otherwise. I think it'd be easy to write Timothy off as like a very young kid who has no place in anything or doing anything. And Paul, on the other hand, is like, I'm going to trust him with a lot and put him in charge of a lot of things, which I think is really cool. But there's a really cool thing in 1 Timothy that says that, the Lord has unlimited patience.
Right.
And it's like, anytime I get there, it just becomes my stopping point for the day.
Yeah.
It's like, that it's usually my shortest quiet time of the year is whenever I read through 1 Timothy.
1 Timothy chapter 1.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, I'm done. Here we go. That's all I need for today.
You get to verse 15 and you bail.
Yeah, unlimited patience. And when I think about like the Lord having lips anointed with grace and having unlimited patience, there's something in me that is goodness. Like it's so healthy to read that for me, because it's easy for me to think the exact opposite if I'm not careful. If I'm not in a healthy place, it's easy for me to think about the Lord having a lack of patience and not having any grace. And all the scripture points to the contrary. And thankfully, at the age of 27, I have a lot less of those days where I'm worried about the Lord possibly not having grace or not being patient. Those are very fleeting at this point in my life, and I'm grateful for that, but that doesn't mean that doesn't happen. But it's always it's just a kind reminder. And when you think about the Lord, it can be so easy for us to just project human attributes on him. And it's not a human attribute to have, you know, lips anointed with grace or unlimited patience.
Yeah. Whenever Psalm 45 was put into the Greek, you know, it was written in Hebrew, but whenever it was put into Greek, that's like that. So there was
the Septuagint.
Yes. The Septuagint, a big version of the Old Testament, you know, the Old Testament in the Greek language that, you know, once the whole world was speaking Greek, the Jewish people made a version of it. Anyway, but that word is the word, charis, for grace, where it's where we get the word charity.
Charity.
Yeah. It's like if the way somebody speaks, like he speaks with charity. I mean, I'm glad that you're bringing up this lips anointed with grace thing, because there were certain words that just, it's like, there's a couple of things that happened to me in Psalm 45. One, it's just beautiful. Like it's just great writing. Like you just start with like, my heart is stirred by a noble theme as I recite my verses for the King. You are the most excellent of men. You know, it's just really like, it's just lofty poetic language. It rolls. It's really nice, you know? But also once I get past that layer, which like, I love that layer. I love the layer of just like, this is good poetry and art. Dig a little deeper, or you do like if I did a more kind of prosaic, dive into this, there's just like, I would just do kind of like a keyword search. And it's just like, there's words like, grace, joy, justice, mm-hmm. humility.
Yeah.
Like there's, there's this really, really cool verse where he says, gird your sword upon your side, O mighty one. Clothe yourself with splendor and majesty. And in your majesty, ride forth victoriously. And you're like, dang, this is getting up to like a warrior fever pitch. Yeah. Like this mighty warrior is girding his sword and he's going to ride forth victoriously. And it's like in behalf of, and you're like, all right, what does the mighty warrior ride forth in behalf of? And it's like truth. And you're like, yes. And one of the words is righteousness. And you're like, yes, that's what I imagine. Like, the King of Kings as a warrior riding forth on behalf of truth and righteousness. You're like, yes, that makes perfect sense. And then he's like, and humility. And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait, humility?
Wow, yeah.
And it's like, that's the great conundrum of Jesus, is like, when we create a mighty warrior king, it's like, yeah, at the end of the movie, he's going to be wearing, you know, nice robes and the crown and the sword and everything. But throughout the whole movie, he's going to be slaughtering people.
Yeah.
Like he's going to be flexing
William
on
Wallace.
Yeah. William yeah. Wallace, even Aragorn. Like he's going to be flexing on everybody.
Honestly, dude.
Yeah.
This is so stupid. Side note.
Yeah.
It was hard for me not to think of Aragorn. When he gets married at the end of Return of the King?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just...
Yes.
For some reason, he popped in my head. I was like, no, that's not what this is about.
Well, and that's the whole thing is, like, I think some of that stuff was in Tolkien's mind, you know?
Sure.
But, like, it's like... But the whole movie, he's flexing on people before he gets to that moment,
yeah.
You know? And Jesus is, like, even his last night with his guys, he just takes... off, he disrobes. He takes off all of his clothes and like a slave gets down on the ground and washes the feet, even of Judas, who's going to betray him,
mm-hmm.
who has already made the deal. You know, it's like already started the workings of the deal. He's about to leave the room and go do it. And so it's like this king rides forth victoriously, this mighty warrior on behalf of humility.
Mm-hmm.
He's not flexing on anybody. He's like serving people.
Yeah.
He said in Mark chapter 10, the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. It's like, this is a different dude. It says the scepter of justice will be the scepter of your kingdom.
Right.
And he says, and God has set you apart by anointing you with the oil, not of kingship, not of flexing, but of joy.
Mm.
It's like this kingdom it's going to be about justice. It's going to be about truth and righteousness. Right. All that stuff is key, but it's also going to be about humility and it's going to be about fun.
Mm.
It's going to be about joy. And I think about, like, I can't not think about John Hartman in that.
Mm, yeah.
You know, it's like, this is a kingdom of fun,
right?
Of happiness and joy.
Yeah. When I went and visited John at one point and it was right before Maddie and I were about to get married. And I said,
This is our dear friend who's in heaven.
Yeah, and I was sitting with him and Sue, and I said, okay, yours is a marriage I love. Give me marriage advice. And he said, first things first, number one, have fun. Number two, have fun. And if neither of those work, number three, have fun.
Oh,
and I was just like, gosh, that is so sweet.
And he always had a laugh, like, in the chamber.
Mm.
Like, he just was... He was a person anointed with the oil of joy.
Right.
You know?
Well, I love that. Gosh, I mean, I can't get off of that verse because the and justice part, we just spent a couple weeks in our high school Bible study in John chapter 9, and there's that horrible part where he gets the man who gets
kicked out.
He gets bullied. He gets straight up bullied.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally bullying. The Pharisees are just like, get out of here. And they're basically just saying, like, hey, you're done with this, period. God's done with you.
Yeah.
You don't have a place. And it's all because they have power.
And by the way, we know you've been a stinking sinner since you were born.
Exactly. You're steeped in birth.
Yeah,
that's what they say. You know, which, I mean, they're basically saying you're steeped in sin from birth. Did I say steeped in birth?
Yeah.
I think I did. That's weird.
A little weird.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically calling him a bag of tea that has just been sitting in sin his entire life.
Just sitting in there.
They can't get over the fact that they can't even imagine the fact that he was blind for his entire life and then all of a sudden he was healed. They are just so whatever. And they bully the snot out of him. And the next verse after that says he got kicked out is when Jesus found out, he went and found him. And I think it's so cool.
So cool.
Because, I mean, it was the most unjust thing. I mean, we were talking about on Sunday and just realizing, like, the emotions that man must have been feeling, going from the most amazing, joyful thing ever to being able to see right off the bat to, like, his parents being total cowards and not standing up for him in front of everybody. Right. It literally says because they were afraid.
Right.
Because the Pharisees were bullies. And they controlled all the spiritual whatever. And to being insecure and afraid and all that stuff about that, plus the fact that now his religion is out the window, but also at the same time he can see for the first time ever, like, there's just all these
emotions.
Yeah, just a shotgun spray of emotions, and Jesus went and found him. And I think it's so cool. Anytime there's moments where, like, justice reigns, I'm like, let's throw a party. I think it's so cool. Yes. You know, and when there's moments of total injustice, like there was in that particular thing in John chapter 9, my blood boils. And when I think about this saying, like, in verse 7, you love righteousness and hate wickedness. I think that's so cool.
And the scepter of your kingdom will be a scepter of justice.
Exactly. It's amazing.
Well, there's that place also in the Last Supper, or not the Last Supper, the last week of Jesus' life, where Mary of Bethany anoints Jesus with perfume, and the disciples are going off, making fun of her, because they're calling it a waste. And Jesus literally says to his best friends in the world, leave her alone.
Yeah.
It's, you're just like, yeah!
Yeah.
Get him! Jesus! Like, you know, it's like, it's, he's about justice, he's about joy, he has lips anointed with grace. It's so awesome. And then the singer of the song turns to the bride. And this is, like, one of my favorite things in all of Scripture, because he says, forget your people and your father's house, because the king is enthralled by your beauty.
Mm.
And I think, like, the thing that this always does in me is it always helps me to return to this place of, it doesn't matter what anybody thinks of me.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Because Jesus adores me.
Yeah.
Like, he loves you like crazy. Like, he's, like, that word enthralled, it is such, that is such a passionate word.
Right.
I'm, like, it's not that I think you're cute. It's not that I think you're pretty. It's not that I think, like, wow, you look really great today. Like, enthralled. Like, there's a thing, whenever I compliment my wife on just how she looks or anything like that, or just something I like about her, she has this really cute thing where she has this coy smile and she's like, you like me.
Mm.
And I always say, no, I am completely obsessed.
Oh, that's
sweet. And then she just giggles, you know, and we've been doing that for 20 years, but like, but it's just like the idea that, like, it's like, how much do we run around trying to get everybody to have a good opinion of us, like the way that we talk, so that this person thinks I'm funny, so that person thinks I'm cool, so that person thinks I'm smart or whatever. I'm reading this book because I want people to think I'm clever or whatever it is. I know a lot about these things. And it's like, the whole time, the king of the universe, this mighty warrior of grace and joy and justice, is like over in the corner going, hey, just so you know, I can't stop thinking about you. I'm absolutely enthralled by you. So this is my question to me, to you, to everybody that listens to this. Like, what would happen if I really believed that?
Yeah.
Like, believed it down to my bones.
Yeah. There's a phrase that, for whatever reason, started the past few years. I think when I was in college, and it was I'm sure it's been going on forever, but a very common phrase to hear was living my best life.
Yeah.
Like, I'm living my best life.
Right.
When Thomas is living his best life, he doesn't care about anybody else's opinion but the Lord. And the amazing thing about that is his mind is already made up about us.
Yes.
You get to live in this, like, space-time continuum of, like...
Yeah, you don't have to talk him into it.
No, and you're living a world where you're trying to win his heart, and it's already won at the same time, which is amazing.
Yeah.
What? That's so cool. It's like taking the field, knowing that there's not a chance that I'm going to fumble, throw an interception. Every play I'm going to score a touchdown, and the other team isn't going to do anything but hand the ball
to me.
That's
crazy.
You know, it's so cool. You're just like, oh, this is a foregone conclusion. I'm going to win. Like, my job today is to win your smile. Also, I've already won your smile.
Yeah. What? Well, so apparently you're enthralled.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Because when you're living your life for anyone else's approval, no matter how much of it you get, it's never going to be enough, period. Yep. It's never going to be good enough. You're always going to want more. You're always going to need more. You're always going to be looking for more. You're just never going to find it. And it's the best feeling ever when you just get past that. Well, I'm not saying that as someone who's a professional at it. I'm saying that as someone who's like recovering at a lifetime of that. Like, that's my perspective on that. It's not like, listen, I'm great at this, so you should listen to me. It's, listen, I've had to work my butt off of this forever since I was a child.
And I'm still working.
And I'm still working extremely hard on it.
It was interesting because I mentioned a couple times, like just this morning hanging out with those guys, and I asked them this question of like, okay, the people in your world, in your life, people your age, the people you're going to be around all day today, what are they looking for? Mm-hmm. Like, what are they going after in their life? What do they want? And the first guy that answered said, he just said something super insightful. I thought they were going to say like money, shoes, girls, stuff like that. And he said, attention. Mm. And then he said, and shoes.
Yeah.
But like.
And shoes.
But like, he definitely threw shoes in there. But like the first thing he said was attention. And I thought that was super insightful, that the human heart wants to be paid attention to. And literally the mighty warrior, king of the universe, who, what did you say? You were quoting the last verse, verse 17, the nations will praise him forever and ever. That dude literally can't stop thinking about you.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael Scott has that quote. He says, do I need to be liked? Absolutely not. I like to be liked. I enjoy being liked. I have to be liked, but it's not like this compulsive need to be like my need to be praised. I had to look it up because I didn't want to mess it up.
Gosh.
But like, if you ever see me at my worst, it's probably because that is the lens I'm looking at my life
through. And that's the brilliance of the Michael Scott character, is like, it just takes something that's in everybody and it turns it up to 11.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so hard to watch.
Right.
And so funny. That's why we all laugh at it, because we're all like, oh my gosh.
Right.
That is the human condition.
Oh yeah. I was watching the one yesterday where Toby had to counsel him because you've never seen the nepotism episode because you had already stopped watching.
Yeah, yeah.
At some point, Michael hires his like nephew.
Yeah.
And he's terrible, so Michael ends up spanking him in the office.
What?
Like, it's just ridiculous. So he has to go to counseling with Toby for whatever.
Gosh.
And Toby, like, you know, tricks him into doing counseling. It's beautiful, but.
Well, for those of you who don't know, as soon as Jim and Pam got together, I bailed out of the office.
Which I personally think is wrong. So,
well, I think it's
look,
when
I
the
get
office
it.
Ended.
I get it. I get it. Would you still laugh the rest of it? Absolutely.
No, so here's my thing. I wager that there's probably, after that point, there's probably 6 to 10 excellent episodes and then some fodder. And so what I want from Thomas, I'm waiting on it from Thomas and Clark and any other listeners to this show who might want to, like, send me your top 6 episodes after Jim and Pam, after Niagara Falls.
There's this like weird, there's a weird scene in, for some reason, I don't know how to explain this, but there's an episode where Dwight accidentally sets off a bug bomb in Michael's office. It wouldn't be Michael's, it's different characters at this point.
Okay.
And it just like explodes and everything turns white all of a sudden. And stuff like that makes me laugh so hard. And then Dwight does one later in his car and it just makes me laugh. No, dude, just watch the thing.
I'm not going to watch all of them.
Why?
I want, because.
It's, you know what you sound like right now? This is going to sting.
Okay.
When D-Rod, at this point, he just refuses to read Harry Potter because it's his thing. Like. But his response is, I've never watched Harry Potter. Oh, and he says that because he knows it drives me crazy.
Can I give you my theory, though? Because D-Rod's always doing bits. My theory is he's listening to him on the side. He just won't admit it to anybody. So my goal is to catch D-Rod in a moment where you like make a reference and he's like, oh yeah, yeah, like in the third task. And we're all like, oh, you're doing it. You're going through it.
I will never, until the day one of us dies, I will never know if he's really colorblind.
Because he just
what he says just is things. He says the wrong colors. He calls it colorblind. What he actually is saying is, I never learned my colors, so I don't know what green is and I don't know what blue is, which he calls it colorblind. And I'm like, but also, you know your colors.
Right, right.
It's so ridiculous.
Gosh, guys, this has been so fun. Thanks for joining us. I am Lee.
I'm Thomas.
And this has been Ancient and New.
Right, stop or pause?
Stop.
Okay. Sisters, that's what this song is about. And this is something worth singing about. I want you to sing this like you mean it. We're going to go all the way back to the start and sing about the fact that God has made up his mind on us. Sing this with me. When I mess things up, it's easy to think you love me less. But your love for me is a choice you've made. Where you see me, say yes, you've made up your mind that I am accepted. Made up your mind that I'm without blame. You've made up your mind that I am wanted. You've made up your mind, help me to do the same. When I feel it's easy to think you feel the same, but you took the cross to take me in, and you will never push me away. You've made up your mind that I am accepted. You've made up your mind that I'm without blame. To the same.